Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I want to take a few moments of your time to tell everyone about Military Broadcast Radio, or MBR for short. A veterans radio station in Boulder, Colorado that helps with podcasts and media training for disabled and transitioning veterans looking for a way to give voice to what's on their minds. They also provide support for those veterans in need through direct support or veterans help organizations. They can be found on the internet at www.mbradio.us and on social media through their YouTube channel, MB Radio, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and Rumble. MBR Radio is a nonprofit and relies strictly on corporate donors and viewers who subscribe and like the shows. If you wish to donate, please visit their website and check the Sponsor or Donate tab. However you decide to support this program, it is all greatly appreciated by all the veterans who contribute to the programming on this station. I thank you on behalf of MBR Radio for listening to this. Kid Felcher, 1,000 welcomes to the Village Oak Tree for June 26, 2024. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and thank you to everyone who's watching or listening to us for joining us today. I have an interview with a former U.S. soldier who travels around talking about recovering from traumatic events and resilience. So today, please welcome Mr. Brian Fleming. How are you, sir?
I am well. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yes, sir. Well, let me kind of give you an idea. I'm not going to, you know, as I mentioned before, we're not going to talk about what happened to you in Kandahar. But because there is a military audience for this podcast, my first question for you is, we want to know a little bit about your military background, basic stuff. Okay. What was your unit in Kandahar? What was your primary MOS? What was your rank when, you know, when you got exfilled out of there? Look, just basic stuff like that, so that the audience, especially all the folks out there in Boulder, Colorado, at the MBR radio station, kind of get an idea of who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Brian Fleming. I served as a team leader in an infantry platoon with the 10th Mountain Division in Afghanistan in 2006. So my job was infantry, 11 Bravo, and I joined in 2003. Got injured in 2006 over there, and then was medically put out in 2007.
Okay. Well, very good. Very good. So you got hit, and I won't go into details as far as that goes. A lot of us got hit in various forms or another while we were there. I mean, my own self, I was in Afghanistan with a special operations unit in 2002. You know, we had our own issues with the locals. I mean, my unit was stationed way up in the northeastern quadrant up there in Kunduz, which I think by the time you got there, we were pulled out of there. everything was concentrated in the south. But the big thing is, so you got hit. Kind of tell us about your recovery from this traumatic event.
Yeah, I had a suicide bomber drive his minivan into the door of my Humvee in Kandahar. And blew the whole thing up, blew into a million pieces right there about 2 miles outside the front gate to Kandahar Airfield. And that was on July 24th of 2006. I just, you know, I woke up on the side of the road, on the side of Highway 1, burned and bloody. Helmet was no longer on my head. Fountain of blood pouring out of my face. Second degree burns on my face and neck, which have healed. Third degree on both my hands. No idea where I was. Took about a half hour for the medevac helicopter to get there, which was actually pretty good timing from what I could tell in my past experience. Then I was medevaced out. I was from Kandahar, Afghanistan to San Antonio, Texas to Brooke Army Medical Center in 3 days. The Air Force had a lot to do with once I got to Kandahar Airfield. The Air Force was a big part of getting me back home, and they did an absolutely spectacular job getting me there and taking care of me. And I stayed at Burke Army Medical Center for the next 14 months, enduring just, you know, very painful burn treatments, reconstructive surgery on my hands, skin grafts. I, had to, go through that debridement process where they have to scrape and, you use razor blades to get all the charred, dirty, burned skin off your body, which was probably the worst physical experience I've ever been through.
Wow. Yeah. Like I said, this, this podcast goes out all over the world, but it also goes to Military Broadcast Radio in Boulder, Colorado, which is run by veterans. Some of them are disabled, some of them not so much, varying degrees. So, that's part of one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, to kind of give them an idea of what the transition was like for you. So now we're at, you're recovered at this point, obviously. So after all your medical journeys and stuff like that, what else did you go through? Kind of give us, let's start off with is, as all of us have had to deal with, and myself included, your experience with the VA, because obviously you got medically discharged after all of this. I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So once you transition and out off active duty, I would imagine part of your transition work process was to get enrolled in the VA system.
Actually, it was pretty seamless for me, and it may have been a unique case, but at the time I was on my way out of the military, if I remember correctly, the whole Walter Reed thing had went down recently. Mm-hmm. And so all eyes were on places like Balboa, Bethesda, Burke Army Medical Center, the other right. big medical centers, which I was at. And so I was actually enrolled as far as the VA. I was enrolled in the VA. And before I even took my terminal leave, and it kicked in, within a couple of weeks of me actually getting out of the military. And I didn't actually even know there was VA. I didn't know what they were talking about when they said, well, we're enrolling in the VA and get your percentage and this kind of stuff. And I didn't even know that was a thing. I didn't know what there was medical retirement. I didn't know there was VA benefits or, comp and pen. I didn't know any of that. I just figured I'd get out and I'd find a job or do something and figure life out. And I learned that, there's VA stuff, and I was very fortunate for that.
Okay. Well, that's good, because a lot of guys didn't get in on it. I mean, I knew about the VA, so it was not that I went looking for it, but when I retired from Fort Bragg at the end of 2004, that was part of my transition process as well. They just automatically sent me down to the VA clinic at Fort Bragg. They scanned me left, inside, and out, and all around, and set me up with, claims and all that kind of stuff, offered me a paltry 10%, said, yeah, have a nice day. We got you all documented. See you, have a nice life. I'm like, okay. And then it's been a progressive thing ever since. So once you transitioned into civilian life, so what's been your story with the VA since?
I really just kind of avoid them as much as possible. I never feel more stressed out or pissed off than when I have to go to the VA for a number of reasons. Mainly it's just kind of, hey, let's come back and readdress everything you've always been dealing with since 2006. And, I've been out, since 07. And so, it's been, 15, 16 plus years. I'd rather do something with my life and my experiences that's productive for the world rather than to keep going back over and over and over again. And just to revisit, kind of how, I don't know if I can say it on here, how effed up I am from my experience.
Right.
It's just not that positive of an experience. As far as the care in general, I've had very little care there because I avoid the place so much.
Right.
But I'd say it's been average at best, and I've had a few experiences where, last time I went to the Dallas VA when I was living down there, I saw one of my friends who worked there, and I don't remember exactly what happened, but I walked out and I saw him on the way out, and I said, I'm not suicidal, but I completely understand now why some guys leave this place, go out in the car in the parking lot and blow their brains out.
Yeah.
Because it was such a ridiculous experience I was having. It was affecting me a lot of ways, and I would have been better if I just never had to go there. And so that was kind of my last big, I just kind of walked out and gave them the finger, to the building. And, I'm living my life. I don't have time for this kind of stuff. And so it depends on where you are. I think everyone has different experiences, and different VAs are different quality.
Right.
It's government run. So that tells you everything you need to know.
Right. Well, and be honest with you, I have my own experiences up and down. I mean, when I got out, I was enrolled in North Carolina, Fort Bragg being down at Fayetteville, North Carolina. So I automatically got enrolled in the VA system there at Fort Bragg and went into the North Carolina VA system. But I mean, as soon as I got cut loose, I took my terminal leave and I went to Maine, started setting up, my own life afterwards. So once I actually got off active duty, had my DD-214 in hand, I transitioned from North Carolina to the VA system in the state of Maine, which was a horror story. Okay. I spent 10 years up there doing all kinds of stuff. And it was a nightmare. There was very little I had to say that was good about it. So then in 2015, I moved to Texas and got involved with Central VA system. So in my case, I was enrolled at the Temple VA Hospital in Temple, Texas. So it's different from Houston. And I say Houston because I have a son who lives in Houston, and he experienced pretty much what you just said about the Dallas system. He refuses to have any. Now, my son is an Army veteran. He's an Iraq War veteran, got hurt over there. And I pushed him really hard to at least get enrolled into the VA system, because when he out processed, they didn't enroll him automatically. Okay. So a few years later, he's complaining to me about these medical issues. I said, son, go get enrolled in the VA health system. At least get enrolled, if nothing else. Okay. Get yourself a checkup. Let them figure out everything that's wrong with you. Get it on paper. Even if you never go back, at least it's documented. Yeah. So he didn't manage to do that. But he did basically the same thing you did. He got done with the VA hospital there in Houston, Texas. He gave him the finger, said, I'm never going back. And that was the end of that.
Everyone has a different experience, like I said. And I also understand not everybody got enrolled the way I did. I mean, because I was hurt so badly and I was being medically put out at the time that was very different. My brother, for example, he got out of the Marine Corps after invading Iraq, and he got out like I would imagine most people get out of the military. You just ETS. And it's like, I don't know if there's a streamlined service or process for going to VA or not, but I think my experience was probably unique due to my injuries. But I acknowledge the fact that not everyone, had that experience as I did.
Right. Yeah. And that's just it. And, and the other side of the coin. So my experience with Temple, Texas was better than what I had in Maine. Wasn't great, but it was better than Maine. So I was going to the outpatient clinic at South Austin, which was better than going to Temple, Texas. And then I had one really bad experience where I had some kind of special thing that I had to do, and I could only do it at the Audie Murphy VA hospital in San Antonio. So I drive an hour and a half down there, and it was such a nightmare that I was ready to shoot people just to get out of that place. And I told my wife, I said, we are never, ever, ever coming back here again. And that was the end of that. And I told my people up in Austin, I said, don't ever send me down there ever again for anything. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I'm never going back. And, I never had to go back. But still, it was like, all right, So now I'm living on the East Coast and I'm in a place, again, VA hospital is doing their best to try and take care of us here. They're kind of overwhelmed. Having a lot of administrative issues like all the VA hospitals are, and you just deal with it. And I've had my own battles with the VA system in itself. I got involved with a whole bunch of other things medically wise through the years. A lot of stuff cropped up long after I got off active duty. So the fight was, well, how come you didn't tell us within 2 years after you getting off active duty? I said,
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Well, it didn't start happening until later. You'd think, well, you guys know about this stuff. Oh, yeah, well, we're not talking about that. I'm like, okay. You know, I have one of those Agent Orange kind of things going on, which took me several years for them to even marginally acknowledge, oh, yeah, we did this to you. Okay, here, have a little money. Here, have a nice life. You know, we can't fix you, but, you know, we'll acknowledge that, you know, this something happened here. But, I mean, it took years. It took years of fighting and lawyers and everything else to finally get them to admit something. So, you know, I am where I am now, and I'm going to just let it run. I've run the gauntlet. I'm 100% connected, disabled. So I can't get any more out of them. So I'm going to like, okay, whatever, you know. As long as this particular hospital where I'm going to now continues to, you know, engage me, manage minimal health care for me, then I'm okay with that. You know,
worst,
I still have a civilian provider, you know, which they're actually worse than the VA hospital. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's not good. Yeah. So I don't know. What are you going to do? I mean, it's the healthcare system throughout the country. You know, it has its ups and downs, but I think a lot of it depends on the health insurance providers for the most part about what they'll cover and what they won't cover, and all that kind of politics. And then you have to deal with, you know, in our case here, a corporate hospital system that hires doctors that have what I call minimal medical knowledge. If it's not in their good book, they don't know anything about it. They don't know how to think outside the box. So if you come to them with something that's not in their good book, well, they don't know how to deal with it. And, you know, that's the civilian side.
Okay.
And it's not just here that I run into that. I ran into that when I was in Texas as well. You know, you're from Texas. You're familiar with Baylor Scott and White?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, they were the big ones there, especially in Central Texas. And they were one of those, what I call them, cookie cutter medicine. Okay. If it wasn't in their medical books, they wouldn't touch it. I'm like, seriously? I mean, I got this, you know. Oh, well, no, sorry. We don't know how to deal with that. You know, we have a specialist, though. I'm like, and? Well, it's not covered by your insurance.
Yeah.
That was what I always got. Well, yeah, we can send you to see a specialist, but it's not covered.
Well, so, and then if you go to see, a specialist, then they have somebody in the room assisting them, and that person is not covered under your plan. Then you get a huge bill for that person because, well, they were part of the process. You didn't realize they were going to be in the room, and you didn't check with your network to make sure that person was in network. And, half the mental health battle is not just, you know, dealing with life experiences, it's dealing with insurance companies.
Yep.
I mean, that'll drive some people more crazy than the actual trauma they went through. And I'm not joking about that.
No. And this is part of why I wanted to talk to you about this stuff, because you and I both have gone through both sides of it. And we've been through the VA experience. We've been through the civilian experience in dealing with whatever we're dealing with here. And it's good for everybody out there to kind of know how we are. Okay. That we are having to balance both with trying to get quality care out of Veterans Administration and try to balance the same thing on the civilian side. I mean, like I said, it's kind of hit and miss. There are some people who live in a place where healthcare is excellent. They got great doctors and so on and so forth, you know, and I've lived in places where, yeah, I had a great doctor for a little while till he moved on. Then they got some other idiot in there that replaced him. And then you're back to nothing.
Yeah, you have your doctor, your PCM, your primary care. Yeah, they change. I get a letter in the mail about once every month or two, and I couldn't tell you the last six, you know, PCMs I had. Yeah. Or even they'll ask me if I call them for any reason, who's your PCM? And I'm like, I don't know, who is it this week? Because I have literally no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I make the joke with him. I said, you know what? You guys transition doctors as fast as the Army does.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
You know, it's like, whatever, you know?
And yeah, and I don't expect much out of any government system. Or I don't expect much, really, from the world. So I'm not really disappointed that often, unless it's something that deeply personally affects me, which doesn't happen all the time. Right. But yeah, I just don't expect much from anybody. And so I just try to keep to myself, live my life. And
minimal
expectations
and hope for the best.
Yeah. And I'm in generally good health because I'm 39 right now and I stay in shape and I eat well. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I'm not at a point where I'm needing excessive care, you know, so my experience could change or differ over time, mm-hmm. but I'm at the point I'm at in life right now. I just don't expect much from anybody and I'm not disappointed that much. And I just do my own thing. Yeah.
Well, so tell us about your own thing here. So what did you do after you got out of the military? And now, of course, now you're, what is it? I mean, define what it is, what you do right now.
Yeah. When I got out of the military, right before I got out, I met a Vietnam veteran named Dave Reaver, who had been an author and speaker for probably 35 years at that point. And he was injured in Vietnam. Well, he and I hit it off and we became friends. And so in fact, you said you're out in Colorado. Actually, he has a ranch out in Westcliff, Colorado, about an hour and a half southwest of Colorado Springs. And he does veteran programs there. Well, when he started that program, I was one of the first guys he met, and we became friends. And he basically told me, you know, Brian, if you want, I'll show you how to do something with this, you know, my story, whatever, my injury, everything that happened. And basically he taught me how to do what he did, how to use my story, not to just tell my story and project my story onto the world, but how to tell my story in a way that's helpful and solves a problem and is valuable to the world. Mm-hmm. So it not only allowed me to have this sort of unconventional therapy, I'd call it, getting up on stages and telling a bit of my story, but also talking about the lessons that I learned through my experiences and how they apply to people's lives. And so next thing I know, I had people coming up to me saying, hey, your story is inspiring and great, thanks. But also, and even more important to me, hey, this one thing you said really clicked for me. And it really helped me kind of get past this issue I was facing or this battle I'm fighting, or I know my next step now and I didn't realize it. So using my story through speaking really was therapeutic in a way I never knew it would be. And Dave said, Brian, every time you get on stage, you get a little bit better. And I thought he just meant public speaking, you know, getting better at speaking. Right. And I do anything you do a lot, you get good at generally. Sure. But he also meant in my head and heart, you know, I was getting a little bit better, a little more healing every single time I stood up. I told a bit of my story along with some lessons I learned with the focus of helping other people to, you know, win the battles they're facing. Mm-hmm. And again, a great sense of meaning came into my life through that, because now my suffering had, you know, some meaning to it, at least in the sense that, you know, I'm seeing other people helped. And it sort of gave me a new mission in life upon getting out. And that's one of the big things a lot of service members struggle with, is that when they get out of the military, they don't have their next mission. And I didn't really know to have my next mission. I mean, missions are always given to you in the military.
Yep.
Well, you get out. Now it's like you have to make the mission.
Yep.
And I guess, you know, I should have known that. It didn't occur to me, and it doesn't occur to a lot of people. They don't have their next mission lined up before they get out. So meeting Dave, the guy who mentored me, I didn't deal with that for too long because I sort of, you know, aligned with him and he taught me and mentored me along. So I had a very short period of that whole not having my next mission. And that was absolutely miserable because it was the first, you know, month or so out. It was just sort of like, what am I doing with my life? It was, you know, I always had something to fight for. There was something to do. And now I had to, oh yeah, I guess I should just, you know, I need to figure this out. And so I went to work with Dave, and then I traveled and spoke with him on the weekends, and he'd put me on his stages, you know, 75 to 100 times a year, this guy's speaking. And for the first year or so, I was on almost every one of his stages for 2 to 5 minutes. And then I started booking my own gigs like partway through that whole first year. And so it was really I gained a really redemptive perspective on the suffering and the pain I'd gone through, because I saw through this medium of speaking, using my story, it was helping other people win their own battles. And so now I've been doing that for 16 and a half years.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your yearly mission here. So how much traveling do you do during a year?
It depends on the time of year. I generally speak, I say 35 to 45 times a year. I don't want to do much more than that. I have two teenage kids, and I remember going on the road sometimes, and I would come back, and it was great for business. But I'd be gone for like 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. I come home, my kids looked taller. They looked a little bit different. Their voices were deeper. Yeah. And I just thought, man, it was good business the past couple of weeks, but I am missing something important. I never want to come home from being on the road and my kids look and sound a little bit different. That means I was gone too long.
Yeah.
And so it just depends. But what I'm also doing now, over the years, I've had so many people ask me, how the heck did you get into speaking? Like, how does one do this? Like, they don't teach you how to do this in school or college.
No.
Yeah, I didn't know anybody spoke even for a living, let alone, I mean, one-off speaking gigs where you could get paid for it. Completely changed my family tree. And I just, over the years, people keep asking. And so I created a program called Use Your Story at useyourstory.com, where I teach other people who are trauma survivors and people with unique life stories how to make a difference and an income sharing their story as professional speakers. And and so it's the next thing. I mean, I've been doing it for 16 and a half years. I've done pretty well with it. And so one of the things is that I'm at a point in life where more recently, the past year or two, I've really felt led to turn back around and now equip other people, because I know how to do this now. I know the ins and outs. I know everything about it because I've been doing it so long. I can help other people do what I did, and what it took may have taken me 4 or 5 years to do, they can do in 9 months, 18 months, as far as figuring things out and, shortening that learning curve so that they can know how to do this thing productively and successfully in a very short window of time. And so they can make a difference with their stories.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you're conducting classes on this stuff, right?
Yeah, I have an online program. In fact, if you go to useyourstory.com, I actually have a free resource there. It's called the Share Your Story Roadmap. And I show you exactly how to share your story and make your first $500 speaking. And the reason I say I don't want the $500 thing to sound too gimmicky or marketing wise, but here's the thing Dave told me. He said, Brian, it's not about the money, obviously. He said, but money is the grease on the machine that makes everything possible. If you don't know how to be financially productive with sharing your story or whatever you're doing, you're not going to help a whole lot of people because you're not going to be able to go to where they are and reach them. You have to have that side of it. And so I thought, you know what? Making $500 sharing your story is so stupidly simple and easy to do if you know how to do it, which is why I created the Share Your Story Roadmap. So you'll know exactly how to share your story from a place of value, from a position of value, so people will want to hear it, and also how to make your first $500 speaking. So if you want that, go grab that free Share Your Story Roadmap at useyourstory.com.
Interesting. So I'm going to take it, since you've been successful at this, there's been a market for this kind of thing, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, there are so many people that want to share their story, but they just have no idea where to begin, or how do you get started, or how do you launch, or how do you put together a speech, or who would want to hear my story? Why would they? Where do I find these people? How do I get booked? How do I get paid? How do you negotiate what the speaking fee is? Like, to know how much you can get paid each time. How do you have that conversation without it, the weird money conversation, being weird or anything? There's just so many little things, or, people, I'll tell you this, people really underestimate the power of their own stories. One of the biggest, things people say is, gosh, who would care about my story? Because they look at some other story, like, a guy who's like born with no arms and legs, or, or somebody who has some extreme life story. And I have kind of an extreme life story. I was, attacked by a suicide bomber and survived. And he blew up 3 feet away from me. Right. I would say, in my experience, 90% of highly successful professional speakers do not have what I would call extreme life stories like that. or like the guy who climbed Everest blind or with no legs or something. Like most speakers are, you don't have to be that. And most speakers, I don't think are. It's knowing how to take your story and talk about it in a way that it's of value. And you always provide value in the form.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Of solving a problem. That's the best way to provide value. If you're in any business, if you're not providing value, you're not in business.
Right.
And so it's solving problems for people. And so when you position your story and how you tell it from that angle, and the outcome is that you not only shared your story, but you accomplished helping people solve a problem they have. Now they want to tell everybody who has that problem, and you know, more people want you to help them. And that's not only great for business, it's a great life to live. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you get out and you think you have no meaning, you had no sense of meaning, got out of the military, my biggest thing, I'll say you're probably not helping enough people, because the times in my life when I go into a slump and I feel like life is meaningless, every now and then it happens, it goes up and down. Every single time I look at my life and what am I doing lately? What the hell am I doing for anyone lately? And I realize usually that, oh, I stopped doing that one thing and I didn't start doing another thing. And so I'm not engaging with people or helping people in some way because I just fell into a slump and whatever. So, I mean, doing this, for example, if you feel led to do it, helps you avoid that. And there are a lot of people who they get out of the military and they want to create a nonprofit or a cause, and they want to promote that cause because they're trying to fix a problem, maybe for the veterans or whatever their cause is. Well, you have to know how to share your story, how to speak, how to deliver a clear and compelling message in order to, for example, to get people behind your cause, for example, if it's a nonprofit, and get them to donate money so together, collectively, we can solve this problem. You have to know how to present and do it from a place of value. And that's exactly what I do. And that's what I've been doing for years. And that's what I teach people how to do with their stories.
Okay.
I think it's one of the best ways I could ever give back to the world, especially so many of the organizations that were so generous to me after coming home injured. Mm-hmm. I've spoken for so many of their fundraisers. Now, I don't even charge them for it. I'm like, don't give me a nickel. You know, one of them flew my mother from New York to San Antonio when I got blasted in Afghanistan. You know, and like, I've been in touch with those people for years. I've spoken at their events. Mm-hmm. Don't give me anything. Let me just raise money for you. I mean, because those people did such amazing things for me in my great time in need and for my family. Right. But, you know, but it's because I know how to do this that I can do those kinds of things.
Huh. That's interesting. So just out of curiosity, what's a typical audience for you?
Generally, I speak for business conferences, conventions, things like that. I'll do keynote speeches and sometimes breakout sessions. Keynote speeches are generally 45 to 60 minutes. Breakout sessions are a little more specialized content. In addition to that, if you've ever been to a conference, you know what those are. But I speak on primarily resilience, and I didn't really choose that initially. It was just kind of my life story.
Right.
That's kind of what I did. And so I talk about how to stand firm when everything around you was blowing up. And, you know, it's people have all kinds of stuff blowing up in their lives. And there are things that the world's most resilient people I have found do. There's things they do, ways they think that allow them to push through when you see other people maybe go through a similar or the same situation and they just can't seem to get their footing and get back up. And so over the years, I've been talking about, well, what worked for me, what worked for a lot of my friends, what worked for people throughout history who I've studied. And, you know, there's patterns.
Interesting.
And so I share that with people.
Right. Wow. It's Truthfully, I had no idea there was even a market for stuff like that. I mean,
I didn't either.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I'm an introvert. I mean, especially after getting out of the military, the last thing I wanted to do was be in the public eye, which is, you know, when I left North Carolina at the end of 2004, all I cared about was getting as far north as I could. I say north simply because I had family up there, but I wanted to hit the North Maine woods as quickly as I could and hide from the world and just kind of get my head together. And in my case, it was probably a good thing. I had a lot of issues with all that. I mean, I made 8 deployments in my career, and 3 of them were combat tours. So what the VA said about me was that you have what's called progressive PTSD. And I'm like, excuse me? He says, you want to identify that for me? And that's, they told me that because you had this throughout the years, all these different traumatic events that happened to you on all these different deployments, it accumulated in you. And, you know, now that you're off active duty, all this stuff is coming out and you're behaving like a crazy person, you know? So I'm like, okay. And, you know, and that's kind of where that went from there. And I was, you know, I was in, you know, still am actually still getting what they call a maintenance kind of thing, for treatment. We chat once a month to make sure that I'm still not doing some crazy stuff and everything's copacetic. But I guess you're right. I mean, I found a niche about almost 3 years ago. I started writing for therapy, blog articles and things like that. I would write short stories, publish them online, things like that. And it helped me get things out. And then, you know, talking to various people, about a year ago, somebody convinced me to start a podcast simply because this, again, it's part of therapy for me.
Absolutely.
You know,
and any way you can express yourself, whether it's through art, writing, speaking, painting, songwriting, the arts are extremely healing because they allow you to express yourself in different ways. And any way we're able to express ourselves productively, where it's not hurting other people, but we can have outward expressions of what's inside of us, that's by human nature, it's a healing thing. And so this is, I totally get it. I never actually thought of a podcast as a great healing means of getting things out in expression, but you're absolutely right. It totally is.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like anything else, I look at it as just a journey. You know what I mean? The more I get into different things, you know, I always bounce it off people. So like I said before, I have 2 sons, both went in the Army. My oldest son went to Kandahar in 2011. He was in artillery, and my second son, was a commo guy with a unit in Germany. He did 6 months in Iraq. Again, they both came back kind of messed up, and I'm like doing all I can to help them because of my experiences and things. But I mean, there's only so much you can do, far as that goes. But at the same time, like you said, everybody has their own way of doing things. I mean, I kept that stuff bottled up in me for years and years and years. So the VA, going through therapy with the VA helped me express it one-on-one with the therapist. But it was with counselors at the vet centers, not the VA itself. I had a lot of nightmare issues with VA's so-called mental health program, which is a joke. That's a whole nother animal. But the big thing is, through all of that process, it allowed me to kind of think things through and figure out what's good for me. And like I said, about 3 years ago, my local counselor suggested that I start doing something a little more, as you say, artistic, if you will. And that's part of what these guys out here at this radio station in Boulder do as well. They express themselves with their podcast videos, their radio shows, their live stream radio shows that they do, various other. And it's, you know, men and women all throughout. It's a pretty good mix of people, at NBR that host these different things. I think There's a couple of them that are like music disc jockeys, I guess. They play music of whatever kind or another. There's some of them that are doing self-help kind of things. And who knows what. But like I said, the radio station is so-called a training ground for budding podcasters or people who want to be in radio. And I think it was about a month ago, one of their proteges on the radio station got picked up by a national radio syndicate. So now his particular show has gone national.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Everybody was clapping and giving him hands on and, you know, yeah. Like, okay, great. But that's what this is. Now I don't have any illusions to do that. I have no desire whatsoever to go on any kind of a national radio show, because once that happens, they get to tell you what you're going to say. And I'm like, no, I don't want that. You know, this particular podcast I use as a platform for all the things that I want to say. And also I interview interesting people such as yourself. Like this particular show, I consider almost like a public service announcement, because you have a particular thing that you do. It's like a service in a lot of ways, and it's very helpful for veterans, and it's helpful for a lot of people. And you being a veteran doing all of this, describing what you do, there's a very good chance that some veteran who's kind of lost in his own way is going to pick this up and say, hey, you know what? Maybe I can do that. Let me get a hold of Mr. Brian over here. See what I can do.
Absolutely. And that's how it started for me. And I've had several of those kinds of experiences over the years. And thankfully, somebody was doing something and out promoting it where I was able to run into it. Because the thing about it, too, is that a lot of people, everybody responds to trauma differently. Everybody. And so, yeah. I mean, some people are at a point they want to share their story for a reason, for a cause. Other people, they just say, I have no desire to talk about it. And that's just as valid and acceptable. Mm-hmm. But people respond to trauma differently and they deal with trauma differently. So my best piece of advice for anybody would be, you know, try, find out whatever you need to do to deal with things most productively. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't found anything that really works, don't be afraid to try new things.
Right.
Try new things and see, because I mean, I never planned on getting on a stage and speaking in front of people for any reason. Now I do it for a living, and for a decade and a half, I've been doing it. And I found I kind of had a knack for it. You know, I can hold an audience's attention. I can make people laugh. I can deliver a message that people enjoy and it's helpful. I had no idea I could do any of that. I discovered I'm a creative person because of it. I never thought of myself as a creative person at all. Huh. But it turns out I'm so creative, I can hardly stay organized because I always have so many ideas and things like that. It's the beauty and the curse of being a highly creative person.
Right.
I've tried so many things over the years, and I'll tell you what, a lot of things I've tried, maybe most things that were recommended I try, a lot of them just didn't work.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like crawling through mud. You know, you got to crawl through a bunch of mud, sometimes a bunch of bad advice or things that didn't work.
Yep.
In order to get to the thing that did. And if you didn't do the previous crawling through the mud, low crawling through all that, I would say, you never would have gotten to the thing that really clicked. And so don't be afraid to just get out there, try stuff, figure yourself out, and be open-minded to the fact you might have interest and be good at things that you do not realize or know of yet.
No, and that's very true. I mean, I'm like anybody else. You know, I jumped into something that I knew how to do and thought that that was going to help me. And in some ways, it did to a degree, but it didn't put me where I needed to be. Okay. And I realized that after a lot of years. And so, you know, like you said, I kind of needed to move into something else. I mean, it took me probably 15 years to kind of figure things out. But eventually, you know, it got to the point where, okay, I can relax a little bit as far as my life is concerned. It took me hitting, you know, Medicare age, what I call the 65, 66 Social Security age, where I could finally back off on some of that stuff. take some of the pressure off. And I realized that, you know what? I can do more than just sit on the couch with my life, and I can do something constructive. And even this right here, what I'm doing now is kind of a journey in itself. Like I said, I started out with just writing articles. So part of it is my activism. Okay. I've been an activist for decades.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Some trouble for it, in different things. Got some trouble in the military for being somewhat of an activist. Basically got told, when I was in Afghanistan in 2002, I saw a lot of bad things happening. And it wasn't so much what was atrocities, as far as that was concerned. I wasn't involved with any of that stuff. But the idea was that I ran into politics. Okay. I didn't like the political stuff that was going on, and it was affecting how we were as far as our mission was concerned. So being a team sergeant, first thing I'm like, hey, this is wrong. I got told, Sergeant, you got a bad attitude. You need to learn how to play the game. I'm like, excuse me? No, wait a minute. And it went from there. So as I said, I came away with that with my head kind of sideways. Because for all those years, I've been following the military system with blinders on, like we all did. And all of a sudden, the blinders came off in Afghanistan, and I started questioning things. And that's when I got told, you got a bad attitude. You need to learn how to play the game. I'm like, obviously, to keep things cohesive, I kind of kept my mouth shut after those talks. Okay. But it never went away up here. So when I got off active duty, I just embraced all of that, and realized that, hey, you know what? I can speak my mind. I don't have to worry about somebody spanking me now. And I don't have to worry about being sanctioned or punished or anything like that. As long as I'm don't run afoul of the U.S. government, which another thing that I learned, before I got off active duty, I learned how to tread the water, so to speak, and figure out, okay, I can do this, I can do that, without having to worry about the FBI knocking on my door. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I pushed the envelope. I have this podcast, which is what I use to push the envelope with. I've been doing a monologue series here the last 3 or 4 months on the failing empire of the United States. It's not going over very well because a lot of people are like, oh, no, we can't have that. We got to raise the flag. We're this and that. And I'm like, I'm sorry. but that's a whole nother thing. Yeah. This platform is a use for people to bring that stuff up if they want. Or in your case, like I said, public service here, which is good. And we'll kind of go from there. So have you got any other parting advice for our veterans out there?
If you're not plugged in with groups of people like us, I would say stay plugged in with people who understand you as much as you're able, whether that's other veterans or not. Sometimes the veteran community can be great. I have some great friends who are also veterans. Mm-hmm. Also, it can be a really weird community full of really crappy, low quality people who I look at and I go, How did you end up this way? What were you taught in the service?
Right.
That when you got out, it just flipped like a switch and you became what you are. Mm-hmm. So we have a weird community as veterans, and always try to be the person who's of value, not the person who's trying to talk someone else down or compare things or what you don't like about somebody or something. It's like business. Always show up providing value. You want more friends. You want more people who can help you, who want to be around you, give you a good community, be of help to you if you need it at some point, always, or for your family, always just be of service to people, be of help to people around you, whether they're veterans or not. Right. If you're feeling miserable, ask yourself the question, am I actively doing anything regularly to help other people? I don't mean just your job or your career. I mean, are you doing things to actually help other people win a battle? Because your perspective is going to change. It's not going to take away the stuff you deal with, obviously, but it will change. It will change your perspective on a lot of things you do deal with when you're helping other people. And not only that, sometimes other people end up seeing things that you need that you don't realize because you have blinders on, because you're so close to yourself in your situation, where they actually want to reciprocate, and they'll do something for you, or they'll make a connection for you that you didn't even expect or know you needed just because you were out doing a good thing. And I mean, you know, that's the kind of world I want to live in. That if everybody was like that, if we were aware and conscious of that, and we did that regularly, I think our world would be in such a better position and such a better place to live.
You know, that's good advice. Joe Biden, I hope you're listening to this, okay? All right, Mr. Fleming, we're about at the end of the hour here. So I appreciate you coming on the show today because you've given us all a lot of good advice. And I highly recommend it. Anybody who's interested in any kind of public speaking engagement, if you feel like, especially veterans who may be looking for a purpose and really have no desire. I mean, I was one of those guys. I knew for a fact that when I got off active duty back in 2004, I could not go to work for an employer and be amongst a bunch of people who would not be able to understand me, my mental thinking, none of that stuff. So I started my own company. I mean, I started a service company because that's what I do. I fix things.
Yeah, and same. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it worked well for me because it's like I told my therapist up there. I said, look, I go to a customer's house to fix their wash machine or their oven range or what have you. If I step in the door and I don't like their attitude, I don't like what I'm walking into as far as their house environment is concerned, what have you, I own the company. I can walk out again. And yes, I lost the money on that service call, but I saved myself from doing something really ignorant, you know what I mean? And hurting somebody or what have you, saying something that I shouldn't have. Because I was famous for that back in the day. I mean, if I didn't like what you were telling me, or if I didn't like what you were presenting to me, I'd be in your face about it. And I had no problems at all. And I still make this joke today. Don't make me break out my drill sergeant hat on you. You know, people don't get it, but it mentally makes me do a check. You know what I mean? When I see that look on somebody's face, when I say that, I realized that, you know, there's only one reason why I'm saying that is because this person needs to have an attitude check. Of course, you know, I'm saying this to myself, and it's my signal to back off. You know what I mean? Mm. It's my signal to walk out, leave these people with their whatever attitude they're having, and just walk away. I wasn't always that smart. You know what I mean? I didn't always walk away back in the early days.
Yeah.
And I got in some trouble for it. But you know, like I said, I think a lot of veterans who have dealt with traumatic events in their careers, even if they only did their initial 4 to 6 years, or if they made a career out of it, unless they were working in a medical building like, you know, Brookside or Walter Reed or something their whole career, they probably had some sort of traumatic something, you know what I mean? Something that it's not going to sit well. So we all relate to that. And as you said, we all deal with it in our own different ways. My way to deal with it at first was to retreat massively. I retreated into my head. I retreated to the far northeastern corner of the United States to get away from people as far as I could and only deal with people on my terms. And it worked well until I managed to work myself out of all of that.
I think there's a time for that too. If that's what people need, you know, I take that time to do that. But sometimes if you stay in a place like that too long, then it can have a dark side to it. So just recognize there can be value in that for a time.
Right. Yeah. And that was my whole thing. I didn't know that either. And I had to kind of figure that out. And it took me 10 years to figure that out. You know, I had I had a family thing that happened in about 2014, and it made me seriously think about what I was doing. You know, was I doing anything at all other than spinning my wheels? So it made me evaluate what was going on and realize that, you know what? I've been up here isolated for all these years. Maybe it's time I get back out into the real world again and see how things are. Okay. And then, you know, I talked to my kids who are adults at this point, their own families, and they all told me the same thing. Yeah, Dad, you know, come down here to Texas, come see the grandkids. And, you know, I'm like, okay. You know, it's like anything else. You do something with good intentions, realize that, well, maybe that wasn't such a good idea, and then you work yourself out of it. It happens. We've all been there. You know, it is what it is. And I'm hoping that, you know, I'm glad to see that you're in a good place, because there are a lot of veterans out there who, even being off active duty for however long, they're still not in a good place. So maybe this will motivate them a little bit. I know. We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, get around good people. Get around people who are better than you at things.
Right.
And just, I mean, don't isolate. And I'm somebody who is very comfortable being isolated and being alone. I'm very peaceful alone.
Yep.
But again, you do it too long,
yep,
there's a dark side to it.
Yeah.
So yep, don't be afraid to get around. There. Yeah. Get around people who are better than you and try to be of value and, you know, have your next mission in life. Like, figure out what you want to do next and just go for it.
Right. And sometimes that mission can change, you know?
Oh, I mean, totally.
I mean, that's what happened to me. I did the isolation thing, figured something out, and worked until it didn't. And then I went into something else.
Yeah, adapt and overcome.
When that didn't work, I went into something else. I mean, I never stopped trying. It's like anything else. So that's good. So, all right then. Well, sir, I'm going to go ahead and close up shop here. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. If you got anything, you've got my email address. If you get into something new, let me know. Maybe we'll do something again down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on your show.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. Take care now.
You too.
So I want to thank Mr. Fleming for coming on the show. I appreciate all of his insights, and he taught me a few things too here in this little brief interlude that we have together. And I hope he goes on to keep doing great things. So other than that, I will see you again next week. While I still have your attention, I want to tell you about how you can support this podcast and my efforts in general. This podcast will continue to remain free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, Krana Biha, and for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Krana Biha, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I have set up a donation tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and a donation page on my website at www.kranabiha.com, which are all linked to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Any amount's appreciated. Now, about my website. The easiest way to find it is to copy it from the background behind me if you're watching this video. If you're listening to an audio version, copy the website name from the podcast logo shown. Search for it and enjoy your visit. Lastly, I'm trying to sell some copies of my book, Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found at major book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu. You can also buy from me direct through the bookstore page on my website. Fugitives in the New United States is available in hardcover, paperback, and digital form. Free if you're a Kindle subscriber. It's written for young adults and older, so it's safe. If this were a movie, it'd be rated PG. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite book retailer and enjoy it. If I sell enough, I'll find the time to write the second book in this series. So I want to thank you for your support, even if it's just a like and a subscribe on my social media accounts. Slantia, thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll return again next week for another episode of the Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube video or audio version. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, which is to shout out to the world about all the bad things our governments are doing to us. This is it goodbye this week. I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slánga fóill.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.